The Athletic.
Hello and welcome back to Pod on the Time, the Athletic's dedicated Newcastle United podcast. My name's Taylor Payne and I'm joined by Chris Woff and George Cockin. How the devil are we this morning, chaps? How are you, Chris? You all right?
I'm all right, thank you. Yeah, I mean, I'm not used to away trips, certainly down south, so this has really taken it out of me this weekend.
It's going to take you a few days to recover, isn't it?
It is, yeah. George is going to have to pick up some slack, you know. He's decided he was going to take the weekend off. Well, he didn't actually take the weekend off, actually, did he? He watched the game. I don't know why I said that. But he took the weekend off from travelling. But I also, maybe it was because my mind was frazzled, but as I waited for the train at King's Cross on the way back, I was sat outside a cafe working, and I heard someone shout, "Hey, Chris, how are you doing?" And I looked up, and I'm going to blame the fact that I'm partly short-sighted, that the fact that I nearly did not recognise that it was Deck from of Anton Deck fame. Obviously, he was... go and get the train himself, wearing a baseball cap as well. That's another part of my defence. But he did shout as he walked off that he's really enjoying the pod. So that was very, very nice to hear.
Lovely.
I mean, if my sister is listening to this, even by the standards of my lack of popular culture knowledge, if I had not recognised Deck, then that would have been a new low for me.
Well, I mean, knowing what we know about you, Chris, there's a very good chance that it wasn't Deck.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just some random person.
Yeah, just some random person. So he probably didn't. He probably wasn't even talking to me. He's probably talking to another Chris who was there.
But, yeah. George, how about you? Any hobnobbing with any A-listers this week?
Yes, I went to Durham, which of course is my ancestral seat, this weekend to go to the passport office. It wasn't very interesting, but I went there with my mum, who's over from America, and as soon as we got out of the car park, we bumped into Grace Donnelly and Olivia Watt, and they were having a couple of days off, Newcastle women, and so we had a nice picture with them, and my mum was very giddy with excitement. That was good. I just want to, can I add about Chris, one of my favourite things about this weekend, which I put into our little chat that we have, Chris posted at halftime at Fulham, what an awful first 20 minutes that was from Newcastle, and someone in response, either Svar, replied, "Make that 45 minutes, sausage man." So we now know what Chris's superhero alter ego would be. What would sausage man's powers be?
Could he turn things into meat, or would he be able to produce meat upon request?
Mini chipolatas out of his fingers.
No, that would be a waste. That would be a waste of them, though. So no, it would be being able to produce them and then eat them whenever someone is short of, whenever someone needs to pick me up, then I can produce a.
You can produce a sausage, Chris, and that's your defence in court, and that's what you're sticking to.
Make that 45 minutes, sausage man.
Maybe he's got one of them hamburger phones, and that's his direct line to the, you know, the City Hall.
The bat
phone. Get Sausage Man on the phone.
Yeah.
This is about as bad a start of the podcast as Newcastle United started.
Yeah, but
we've got another 20 minutes of this to go yet before somebody goes down injured.
We're going to grind through the gears. Maybe we'll do a 20-minute. We'll stop after 20 minutes, and I'll shout at everyone. How about that? See if we can pick up the pace. How are you, Taylor?
I'm not bad. I've had a busy weekend, so I'm sounding slightly gruff today. I don't know what it is. I've got a bit of Northeast Barry White going on. So
Sexy.
It is, isn't it?
It is. Yeah.
For a bit. And then it starts to sound slightly queasy. But, you know, we'll get there. We'll be all right. We'll manage. As you said, Chris, Newcastle United had a woeful start to that game. The first 20 minutes, nothing went right. Everything went in the opposite direction. And Newcastle barely got a touch of the ball.
I think there was a lot of the fact that it was the third match of the week and Newcastle obviously depleted resources, and maybe the players were mentally fatigued as well as physically fatigued, and Fulham started with a fair bit of pace, and for whatever reason Newcastle just could not get into the game. They could not retain possession. They couldn't really string that many passes together. They seemed a little bit passive with Fulham going at them. There was one time where Tosson, basically the Fulham centre-back, ran through the entirety of the midfield. It even looked like Bruno Guimaraes, who we're going to come on to, was obviously the influence laid on and the one who turned the game. I actually thought in the first 20 minutes, he looked like he was running through treacle. There was times where he maybe couldn't see it from people watching at home, but in the game itself, the midfield was basically bypassing him, and he was seeming to run back and not really making any ground up. But he wasn't the only one. It was just about every single person in the team.
Yeah.
Beyond a combination of Martin Dubravka and then Fabian Schär and Dan Byrne, the centre-backs, who Eddie Howe praised afterwards for those first 20 minutes. Newcastle could and should have been behind. Thankfully, Fulham were pretty profligate in front of goal. But the way that Fulham got in down both flanks was pretty alarming those first 20 minutes.
Yeah, it wasn't the best start, was it, George? There was holes all over the place. And Newcastle, like Chris said, they looked like they were really struggling to get their legs going and closing down Fulham. And it just wasn't very good to begin with.
It was god-awful. It was really bad. It was such a bad start. They looked sort of bereft of any kind of...
George has taken the Newcastle United first 20 minutes approach.
Yeah, I like how you said the word bereft and then just completely stopped.
Well, I just felt bereft. I just felt bereft myself. I had nothing in the tank.
Bereft of words.
It can't be me that does the angry thing after 20 minutes, can it? Because I've got nothing in the tank either. Yeah, they were awful. They needed to be shaken up. I mean, that's obviously exactly what happened, didn't it? There was the funny or interesting, or if you're Marco Silva, annoying moment when Martin Dubravka went down with a quote-unquote injury. I mean, he did go down again later in that half, but it was sort of interesting in that first time that he went down, neither of the substitute goalkeepers were warming up. They just sat on the bench. They just sat on the bench twiddling their thumbs. But that did give Howe a chance to shake things up. He looked absolutely furious. Which is something you don't often see from him. He keeps his emotions in check on the sidelines very, very well. But he looked really pissed off. And I think I think that was absolutely fair enough, because it was a dreadful start. It was passive.
It was.
Newcastle were just kind of just rope a dope. They were being punched, and Fulham should have taken the lead. They really should have. So it needed that moment, and then slowly but surely Newcastle came into the game, which was good to see, but it had to happen. They were dreadful.
They were, and here's Dan Byrne, the captain, telling Chris that the wake-up call from the manager is what was needed.
No, yeah, I think it was. Yeah, I think you could sort of feel it anyway, that it sort of needed to be said. We spoke about it, that it was sort of a third game in the week, but we didn't really want to use that as an excuse. Like, I think we've got to change our mentality a bit. Sometimes I think it's like easy to get up for the big games when you're playing sort of the cities and stuff like that, but it's about like continuing to sort of have that motivation constantly in this league to perform well. So yeah, I think we needed that, and I did think we were a lot better after that.
And in terms of going forward for the rest of the season, I suppose that this is a huge matter. I think it's the first clean sheet in the Premier League away since September. I mean, how massive is that as well?
Yeah, huge. We spoke about that. I think that's probably been the big difference this season. Our away form has been nowhere near as good as it was last year. Home we've still been pretty good, but if you want to get up and around the top places, you've got to perform well away, and we haven't done that. So as I said, it's probably not the greatest performance that you'll see from us, but I thought we just showed a lot of character and managed to sort of grind that result out.
So Byrne gave an insight into basically my question to him was, did the manager give you a bit of a rollicking? And he did say that. Now, Bruno Guimaraes, I think it was in an interview with Brazilian TV, was even more explicit really as to what the manager had said. And apparently Eddie Howe had basically said to them, you aren't quick enough, you aren't passing it well enough, you aren't sharp enough, and then he basically used the term, you are not Newcastle United. Oof. Is the way Bruno Guimaraes explained it. When he was furious, you could see he was visibly furious. And to do that in public on the touchline, even though it seemed that they needed that was a big call from her, because
could have went the other way, couldn't
it? Theory, yeah, it could have gone the other way, but I think that as Dan Byrne said, it was basically the home truths that they needed. That almost, yes, it has been a difficult week, and yes, we are in a difficult position in terms of lack of bodies, and you will be all mentally and physically fatigued. But there is also a match here today, and you don't want to be embarrassed by it. And too often away from home this season, those factors have contributed to Newcastle basically falling apart. And after those first 20 minutes, I mean, the thing about Dubravka's injury was it clearly was tactical, but at the same time, maybe it didn't show through on the TV or whatever, but Dubravka basically could not walk after that. For the next 10 minutes, he was properly hobbling around, and then he did go down again. And so he did receive a knock, and he was, unless he was play acting for a heck of a long period of time, it was an injury. Although I understand Marco Silva's frustration and that of Fulham fans to a certain degree, is it wasn't like it was 5 minutes to go and Newcastle winning 1-0 and it stopped Fulham coming back in the game. I know it broke the momentum and it changed what was happening, but there was still 70 minutes of the match remaining, and you can't just solely say that your side couldn't respond to that and that's what got Newcastle through. Fulham's failure was not to score and then to allow Newcastle to build a momentum after that. That was their issue. And yes, it was back to sort of potentially the shithousing of the past, but Newcastle have needed more of that, and that it worked for them on this occasion. It really did work.
It was also an incredibly slow build-up from that point, Chris. I mean, you're right. I mean, they definitely needed that moment, but certainly in the, you know, the first 10, 15 minutes after that, I'm not sure that Newcastle really changed. What was the stat? It was 42nd minute that they'd had only a couple of touches in the Fulham box.
The first shot was the 34th minute, and I think their first shot on target wasn't until about the 50 something minute. So both of which were Gordon. So it
took a long, but it definitely had to happen, because I mean, I think that one of the things that I find so sort of fascinating about Saturday, albeit it was terrible at the start, by the end you say that was just that's a brilliant win. It's a brilliant victory.
It's a great result.
It's a bad, ugly, horrible, disgusting away win. And, you know, that is the hallmark of a good team, that they're able to do that. You know, I hope that kind of provides Newcastle with the confidence to know that they can do that as a side. The thing that I was going to say that I found fascinating is that if you look at the three games over the space of a week, you know, starting with West Ham, you know, you've got that sort of chaos theory. It's an incredible comeback. Newcastle come into it. You then go to Everton. Newcastle have control, it feels like, for 60 minutes. And then at Fulham, they've got no control at all, and then gradually find a way to come back into it. Yeah. You've just seen three, you know, hugely contrasting versions of Newcastle, but they've come out of it with 7 points, and you do need more than one way to win, or one way to get points. We've talked about that a lot. The stat I was talking about there, Chris, was they'd managed three touches in the Fulham box by the 42nd minute. I mean, they barely laid a glove on Fulham, but they came good, they came strong.
And an away clean sheet as well, Chris, something that hasn't happened for an awful long time. Fabian Schär and Dan Byrne looked solid at the back. And the Swiss should have had a goal as well.
Yeah, so it was Newcastle's first clean sheet on the road in the Premier League since the 8-0 victory over Sheffield United in September. And I think that it's only their second in about 24 away games in the Premier League. So that, I mean, their away form, it really has tailed off considering how solid they were throughout much of last season. We know that's been part of the issue, and that's what Dan Byrne spoke to me about as well, is that Newcastle have known that they'll need to try and address that. And in every single away match in the Premier League, regardless of who you face, except maybe that Sheffield United 8-0, although the first 10 minutes Newcastle were maybe a little bit under the cosh, you are going to face periods of the match where the opposition are going to be on top, and you have to find a way through. For Newcastle, it was the first 20 minutes, and they were particularly bad in those spells, and particularly under the cosh. But equally, you've got to show that fight and resilience, and that's what Newcastle did in the end, and they grew into the game eventually. And I thought that Sharon Byrne, it was very much reminiscent of the second half of the 2021-2022 season, when the two of them came together as the centre-backs and really struck up a good partnership then, and Newcastle started to keep clean sheets at that point when they hadn't done, certainly pre-Eddie Howe, but even pre-sort of January 2022, and they do work really well together. And again, I think the game suited them to a certain degree, certainly second half, because of the volume of sort of set pieces that and balls into the box that Fulham had, and Newcastle dealt with them extremely, extremely well.
Yeah, I just want to reiterate that. I thought Dan Burt, I thought they were both centre-halves were absolutely magnificent. I think both full-backs struggled at the start of the match, as Chris mentioned earlier, but I thought Dan was absolutely fabulous. Second game in a row in that position, and he just sort of looks liberated by it. You know, there have been moments this season where he's had a tough time. I would always defend him because, you know, that left-back position, he has made it his own, but there have been times this season where he's had absolutely no cover at all. Come back early from a broken back. I'm just really pleased for him personally that he's been able to play like he has at centre-half the last two matches. He's just been, been fabulous.
So comfortable again, doesn't he, in there?
Yeah, yeah.
He does, and I just want to also, one of the things I asked Byrne about was that was his 150th Premier League start, and so for him, that was a huge thing. He said, I was released by this club at Fulham. He was back at Fulham where he was released at the age of 25. And he said, for me to come back here and it'd be my 150th Premier League start to lead Newcastle out as their captain, that was a huge day for him and his family as well. So I thought that was worth mentioning as well.
We have to mention also as well, VAR, come on. The disallowed goal, Fabian Schär's goal, Dan Byrne was involved in that. He was, I'm going to say, slightly agricultural in his challenge. But what do you think? Do you think it was a foul?
I think this was another example of where VAR does not need to intervene. I think if the goal was initially disallowed, VAR shouldn't intervene to give it. But I also think, given that it was allowed, given it was on the field, decision was for it to stand, I don't think it should have been overruled. Now, Sam Allison, the referee, he was the one on the pitch. And what happens is that Byrne rises. Byrne's argument is, and I've watched it and I can't see how much contact there is, but he argues that Muniz actually shoves him a little bit in the back into Calvin Bassey, and then he sort of catches Calvin Bassey. Now, first of all, Gordon's cross from the right-hand side was a wonderful cross.
No.
Bassey wasn't going to win it, regardless, in my opinion, regardless of whether he gets shoved. The other argument you can make is maybe Bassey then gets in front of the subsequent shot from Cher from a tight angle. How he still manages to get it in, I have no idea, but it's a wonderful reaction and finish from Cher. I just thought it was silly how long it took for it. Was Jared Gillett, the VAR, who suggested that Sam Allison went and looked at it. Now, it took about a minute or two for him to even refer it. And then once he referred it, it took Sam Allison about 6 or 7 views of it. So to me, that's still the clear and obvious. How is that clear and obvious? And that to me was an issue. It probably, by the letter of the law, is a foul, but I didn't think it was enough to sort of overrule it. And certainly Newcastle were frustrated by that. But thankfully, rather than them not be able to capitalise as they had done in midweek against Everton, when obviously the goal had been disallowed for offside when Isak had crossed to Dan Byrne, and Isak was adjudged to have been offside, and Newcastle didn't get the second. Rather than let it stew, they responded really well and obviously scored shortly afterwards.
When Bruno did score that goal, Alan from work tweeted, I should do the accent, really. You're not disallowing that one, VAR. Hashtag shit.
Hashtag shit. Get in.
Hashtag shit. Raging, swearing mouth emoji.
Outstanding. It's a shame to take anything away from Fabian Schär and his constantly bloodied knees, isn't it? I don't know what's going on with his knees. What, Chris, do we know anything about this? In all the injuries we've had this season, it doesn't seem that important, but his knees are always bloody.
They are, and I mean, for once, and I mean, I was going to say for once, so he goes down just about every game with some sort of an issue, and it looked like...
I mean, it is every
game,
isn't it?
It's not just about every game. It is absolutely every single game, multiple times.
But on this occasion, it looked like he was actually going to go off as well. Obviously, we're going to come on to it, but Joe Willock was forced off, but it looked like Cher went down, and Harvey Barnes actually took off at that point, is sort of bib, and was ready to come on early, so it looked like potentially Jacob Murphy was going to go to right back.
Kraft to move
and
inside, yeah.
Then Kraft would go into centre back. Yeah. And that Newcastle were going to make that change. That looked to be more of a muscular injury, I think, rather than his knee for Cher. But again, he's someone who you always fear is going to go off this time, and actually looked like he was going to. But no, he's managed to. And I think George, you said he's the only Newcastle player who started every Premier League game this season, though.
Well, I did tell you that during the match, whether that's true or not, I've got absolutely no idea. But I believe that might be correct. And if we're going to pay tribute to Dan and, you know, his long road to being a sort of Premier League player and a top Premier League player, we have to do the same thing for Fabian. You know, someone who, you know, not too long ago was on the way out at Newcastle. And I know that we mention this every now and again, but it's just worth repeating. You know, he is now so absolutely, utterly crucial to this Newcastle team. Yeah. You know, to have a player who started every Premier League match, if that stat is correct.
Chris is going to check. Yeah.
In this season of all seasons, when, you know, Newcastle players have dropped like flies, to have somebody.
It is correct.
Yeah, cheers. to have somebody like that is so important. And we can take the piss out of him going down every match. Yeah. Bloody hell, he must need a rest. You know, everybody else has had one, in force or otherwise.
He's only missed, I think, and this is just some quick math here, but I think he's only missed 76 minutes of the Premier League season.
Well, that's astonishing, really. As I say, in this season of all seasons, when everybody else has had time on the sidelines, he's been incredibly reliable and a good thing too.
Anderson, oh, great touch, brilliant skill. Barnes in the area, still Harvey Barnes to the back post. It's come for Bruno. Oh, it's in! Bruno Guimaraes following up after the cross was cleared, drives it into the back of the net, and the Brazilian marks his 100th appearance for the club with what could be a precious goal at Craven Cottage.
Speaking of players who are absolutely crucial to Newcastle United, we don't talk about Bruno all that much, Chris, considering how good he's been. Newcastle have played 107 games since he signed, and he's played 100 of them, showing he's as durable as he is talented. And we haven't won any of the ones that he hasn't played in. He's just so important, isn't he?
He's absolutely vital. I mean, I wrote about Bruno Guimaraes after this match. I mean, how could you not? Because he pops up with that big moment. As I say, at the point where the goal is disallowed for VAR, Craven Cottage suddenly... it feels like there's an increased energy for the home crowd. You've seen that at St James's when that something like that can bolster. You did worry for Newcastle at that stage and think, oh, well, that's... And they needed to wrestle the momentum back immediately. And that's exactly what Bruno did. He popped up with the goal. But it wasn't just the fact that he finishes it. He basically starts the move. It's his line-splitting pass through... To Elliot Anderson.
Lovely, wasn't it?
And then Elliot Anderson's role in this goal is just phenomenal. He draws in three defenders and then back heel flicks the ball down the line to Harvey Barnes, who he basically... Elliot Anderson has created the space for Barnes by being in there. And then Barnes crosses it. Anthony Robinson diverts it to the edge of the area and a sort of late arriving Bruno Guimaraes hits it in the ground in the goal. And I didn't think it was an absolutely sort of... trademark Bruno Guimaraes' performance, certainly given the first 20 minutes, but he was the person who had, he had the most key passes in the game of anyone. He was the one trying to make things happen, and he did really grow into the match, and then he pops up with that big moment, and he's now scored in 10 separate Premier League matches for Newcastle since signing, and Newcastle have won every single one of them. But actually, in some ways, I think that stat underplays his significance, because he's not a goal scorer. It was almost a sort of... It sort of gave a false impression of what he was when he first arrived those first 6 months at Newcastle, because he scored quite a few goals, and throughout his career he hasn't done. But what he does is he influences everything. He's central to everything that Newcastle do. And so you look through the stats in the 79 Premier League games compared to the 7 that he hasn't played, Newcastle have a win percentage of 55.7%. They pick up 1.9 points per game rather than 0.6. The average goals for are 1.9 rather than 0.6, and average goals against are marginally better as well at 1.2 to 1.3. He is central to everything Newcastle do. The idea was Sandro Tonali was going to come in and sort of lessen the load on his shoulders. I see some of that hasn't happened. And instead, Bruno Guimaraes has featured in all bar one of Newcastle's games so far this season, which is when he was suspended at Bournemouth, and he is absolutely pivotal.
Yeah, that was the point I was going to make. I was going to retreat back to last summer and, you know, talking to people at the top of the club. One of the reasons they signed Sandro Tonali was because they were absolutely, completely and utterly aware of how reliant they were on Bruno Guimaraes. Now, of course, he's a tone setter, he's a tempo setter. That's the kind of player he is. But there was fear amongst the people at the top of the club that they were relying on him too much and that they couldn't win without him. So I just want us to sort of imagine a scenario. I've just mentioned Fabian Schär playing every Premier League game. Imagine a scenario where Bruno had been injured for any extended period of time this season. With Tonali suspended, Newcastle would have been in a huge amount of trouble. So he's a wonderful footballer. We do take it for granted a bit. Like everybody else this season, he's had peaks and troughs, but he's got a range of passing that nobody else in the team has, that beautiful defence-splitting kind of pass that he can play. We're very, very lucky to have him. You know, we're very lucky that his trajectory has continued this season, albeit the team's hasn't for a long time, for reasons we know. And it's just, yeah, he's a fabulous player. And 107 games since he signed, 100th Premier League appearance. Just, yeah, congratulations, and fingers crossed there are a few more to come.
The only thing he can't do, apparently, is knee slides. I'd imagine everybody had a little had a heart in the mouth moment there when he did that celebration. If he can get through the Spurs game without a booking, though, it will be a truly great escape. If he does get another yellow, though, he should get another one after that, according to emailer Paul McIntosh. Have a listen to this. After his red card v West Ham, Anthony Gordon served a one-match ban and remained on 8 yellows. Does that mean if during game 32 Bruno does get a yellow card, it would actually be in his and Newcastle's best interests for him to make sure he gets a second yellow later in the same game, thus making sure his much-feared two-match ban becomes a one-match ban instead? Chris, I'm trying to make sense of this.
Well, Eddie Howe was asked about this on Friday and basically said he didn't know how to respond to that sort of question, because that's what happened with Anthony Gordon, as has been mentioned. And yeah, that is the case. Now, it's a bizarre sort of quirk in the rules. I'm not exactly sure how you get beyond that, unless you decide that, right, well, someone has accrued 10 yellow cards, and therefore they should get the two-match suspension plus the red card on top of that. It's an odd one, but yeah, it probably would be better for him to get sent off in that scenario. I mean, it is amazing that he'd gone for the first 21 games of the Premier League season, his first 20 appearances, he'd picked up a yellow card every other game, and then he's managed to go the last 10 and 13 in all competitions without picking one up. And it would be the most Newcastle United thing ever if he did get it next weekend. So let's hope.
I've got a theory about this. It's because Joe Linton's not there anymore. because he winds him up, doesn't he? That's what it is. He's standing next to him going, go on, Bruno, kick him. Go on, Bruno, kick him. And then you see Joe Linton flies into tackles and that winds Bruno up and he gets stuck in a bit more. That's what it is since Joe Linton's gone.
Well, again, on TV, Bruno was asked about this and he sort of said that he has found it really difficult because he's a naturally aggressive player. He wants to get involved. But he said that Eddie Howe basically took him to one side and said, you need to be smarter over these next however many games.
Fair enough.
Now, I thought it was inevitable that he was going to get that 10th yellow, and maybe he still does. But if he even lasted this long, I just couldn't see how he would because of the way he plays. But he's been able to off the ball, he's tempered himself slightly, but on the ball, he's still as important as he ever was.
He plays on the edge, doesn't he, quite a lot. And that's something that we've known him for. He's capable of getting involved. He's capable of being niggly, little flicks, you know, little kind of outward signs of aggression. And to keep that under wraps for so long, again, has been hugely, hugely important.
Absolutely. Joe Willock's Achilles heel is his Achilles heel, apparently. We can see why he didn't start against Everton, but it must be a concern, Chris. It seems like he's not quite there yet.
He's not, no, and Howe was sort of circumspect after the match as to what it means going forward as to whether Joe Willock will be available next weekend and sort of beyond between now and the end of the season, because it's one which, speaking to people in the medical profession who know far more about this than me, suggest that the problem with three matches in a week for if you've got an issue with the Achilles is basically Achilles doesn't like load. It doesn't like an increased sort of physical output. And that's obviously what Joe Willock required, regardless of the fact that he didn't start all three games. Now, I think the same is true of Elliot Anderson, who was exceptional when he came on at Fulham, just as he had been against Everton. And I know there was sort of disquiet before the game from quite a few supporters as to why he wasn't starting and why Harvey Barnes wasn't starting. But this is the problem Howe has had over the course of the last few months, is he's got so many players who he has to protect physically, and Anderson has had a back problem. And so really, he probably played longer on Saturday than would have been ideal as well. He was dropped out of the starting 11 for that very reason, but had to come on before half-time for Joe Willock. He had far more of an impact than Willock did. But yeah, it is a worry with Willock. And he barely featured early on, and then even since the intermittent times he's been back, he hasn't looked quite right. And we really have to hope that the off season is huge for Joe Willock and that he can get himself back into a physical shape to produce what we know he can for Newcastle.
So, Chris, it would be nice if Newcastle could play at Craven Cottage every week, wouldn't it? Martin Dubravka has never conceded a goal against Fulham.
Yeah, so it's now five consecutive victories at Craven Cottage, if you include the FA Cup win there in January. I mean, the last time Newcastle lost was the first game of the 2016-17 Championship season.
Good heavens, I remember that.
Under Rafa Benitez, yes. So, yeah, it's a ground where they've had a heck of a lot of recent positive results at, and despite the first 20 minutes on Saturday, they found it again. So given their away form in general, if they could quite often go to Craven Cottage rather than basically every single other ground in the Premier League, then yeah, that would be very welcome indeed.
Yeah, and the running, George, we've gained 5 points on Man United and 3 on West Ham since the international break. 6th is a real possibility here, isn't it, if Newcastle keep going?
Yeah, it's been, if you look at those three matches in isolation, there's been such a kind of contrast. But they went away, they wanted to do this reset, recalibration. Certainly in terms of results, they managed to do that. 7 points from 3 games, really, really good. And yeah, in terms of those results, that is momentum. And that's absolutely what you need at this point of the season. It's just about grinding results out. And, you know, Newcastle have found a way to do that, which is great. I mean, whether you can sort of draw lasting conclusions from any of these games, I don't know, because they have been so different, the way that Newcastle have kind of got points out of them. But you would certainly hope that just the fact of winning or drawing or staying unbeaten is good enough to give them to give themselves confidence. And so it's great. Whether 6 is realistic or not, I don't know. If they can find some way of getting back into Europe, I do think that's hugely important. And yeah, they've got a win behind them now, which is great.
And it's amazing how, when George mentioned this week, if you just think back to an hour in against West Ham as well, and at that point, what I'd said that I'd mentioned and turned to George at that point, and the way that it felt the season was going then, those injuries, the way Newcastle were 3-1 down, and that things could really go wrong from that stage. And then even Everton, it felt deflating as well as Newcastle played for long spells against Everton. They didn't win that game. But if you had offered anyone that at the start of the week, I think they would have taken 7 points from it. I think most would have probably expected Newcastle would have beaten Everton and maybe drawn away at Fulham. But they've done it that way around, and it is astonishing that they're still in this position. They've had an absolutely awful, really, 2.5-3 months. But either side of that, they've had some staggeringly positive results. And I suppose the concern for the run-in is just who is going to be back. Newcastle have got the injuries that they've got. Livramento's not going to be back for another few weeks. Trippier's not going to be back for another few weeks. Miguel Almiron. It doesn't necessarily feel like anyone really is going to be back for Spurs next weekend, or very few if they are. And even Joe Willock now is a doubt. And so that's the issue, is how skeleton their squad is. But to still be in this position and to only be 2 points behind Manchester United, one behind West Ham, who they have a game in hand on as well, that is a position which, going into the international break, I think every Newcastle fan would have taken that after this week.
Chris is absolutely right. I mean, I think we just have to be of the mindset that things aren't going to clear in terms of injuries. You know, probably not till the end of the season, really. But it makes such a difference to have two potential game changers on the bench, which they did in Barnes and Elliot Anderson at Fulham. Of course, against Everton, it was just the one, and it was Willock, and he's not in great physical shape. We can see that. It was, you know, absolutely, in retrospect, it's totally understandable to see why he didn't start that match. If they can just find a way of having these couple of players who can make a difference to them, it helps so much. But yeah, I mean, that's why I think that momentum in itself is so important, because there isn't the cavalry, and you know the cavalry isn't going to come. It's not on the horizon. So they're kind of having to do it themselves. That's why any way possible that they can find a way of grinding out wins is just so important.
Yeah, still lots to play for as we come to the end of the season. So we have to say as well, everyone at Pod on the Time was saddened to hear about the passing of former Newcastle United manager Joe Kinnear at the age of 77, and obviously our thoughts are with his family and friends at this time. Right then, chaps, let's have a little break and stick around, because Jacob Whitehead's going to be popping in after the break to talk about Yacouba Minter. He's been over in the Netherlands.
Come on, you Maggies.
So Jacob Whitehead has joined us, and Jacob's had a fun trip away. He has a rundown of his trip to the Netherlands, delivered with Pod on the Tyne's typical level of cultural sensitivity.
Hello, it is Jacob here from the outside of the Kras Arena after Volendam 0, Feyenoord 0. Good result for Volendam, who are bottom of the Eredivisie. Sadly for them, though, no appearance for our boy Garen Kuol. He's played just 32 minutes since the start of 2024. It was nice at the end to make a beeline straight for Yacouba Minter, another Newcastle-oni who did start for Feyenoord. There's one moment after about 8 minutes where he just did his man on the outside. But after that, it's been with an inconsistent game. He drifts in and out of it. He had one major chance at the start of the second half at a back post, which was probably Feyenoord's best chance to score. Sent it over and was substituted after 56 minutes and losing the ball a couple of times. So not the greatest night for either of them, but Minter has a massive game coming up on Sunday when he takes on Ajax in the Clásico. It is half time in the Clásico, where Yacouba Minter has had a goal and an assist, and Feyenoord are leading Ajax, their biggest rivals, 3-0 at half time.
Minter! Voor de tweede keer dit seizoen leidt Feyenoord met 4-0 tegen Ajax.
Feyenoord is op een 4-0 voorsprong gekomen. man van de goal. Het is zijn tweede van vanmiddag. Jokuma Mente.
Jokuma Mente has just come off the pitch after taking the solo applause of a Feyenoord fans. Two goals, one assist, a 6-0 win for Feyenoord, the biggest in the history of the Clásica, and Mente, an integral part of it. An amazing day here at Rotterdam.
That was a canny week to pick to go away, Jacob, wasn't it?
Hello, ho gat het, who are the youngins? That's hello, how are the lads?
Good.
In Dutch, which I learned.
They can translate how are, that actually translates, does it?
Yeah, famously. I mean, what, you sort of all brothers on the east coast of the Netherlands want joined by land, and so I suppose it's just sort of travelled a lot, you know, across Jutland. Yeah, it was a fun trip. I went over for various reasons. Wanted to watch Jokuma Mente, Garin Kuol, but also do a piece in the Fool of Ajax, interviewed the 18-year-old centre-back, Joao Hatto. And yeah, I mean, what a weekend to pick in the end. 6-0 defeat for Ajax, Feyenoord absolutely rampant. And what a chance to see Mente as well. Probably the most important or the biggest game of his career to date in a home derby. And look how he delivered.
Yeah.
As you say, I mean, what a weekend. And I'm sure most Newcastle fans who are on social media have been watching the clips over the weekend, particularly the way that he sort of took his second goal. But the stats are pretty impressive. And he seems to have had quite the breakthrough season on loan at Feyenoord.
Yeah, the one thing I would say on the statistics is that he is playing in a dominant team in a relatively poor league, which can sort of push him up. Like, I know if you go on his FB ref, for example, he looks like the world's most amazing player. He's in like the 99th percentile for every single thing. And clearly he is very good, but he's also kind of like quite a streaky player in the sense that he can be quite peripheral in lots of games and burst in with a jolt of energy. And sometimes that's brilliant, as we saw against Ajax, and sometimes it just doesn't quite go right for him. But I mean, the sheer talent is there.
Take it back to absolute basics, Jacob. For people who aren't watching the Dutch league, who don't look at Twitter or X, what kind of player is he? I mean, you've seen him in the flesh. What position does he play? What are his attributes? What is he like as a player?
So he's a right winger, and he is the most direct player I've seen. Like, imagine if like a homing pigeon played under wing and he's just told to go towards the goal. That's kind of what he does. So he loves to take the ball on the outside, which is really refreshing. I think he's got the most take-ons in the Eredivisie this season. And his link-up play is kind of building. Like, watch Feyenoord's first goal against Ajax, which I think is actually the most impressive thing he does all games, where he tracks inside, dispossesses the Ajax defender and plays this beautifully weighted through ball into Iga Paschal. So those parts of his games are developing, and that's actually why Newcastle wanted to send him to Feyenoord, where he's working with a very tactically aware manager in Arne Slot and developing those kind of other bits of his game. We've got to remember as well, this is a player who's only been playing professional football in a professional academy setup for around 2 or 3 years. There's so many jagged edges to smooth out, and this year has been a massive part of that process.
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously, none of us need encouragement to kind of get excited about players. And obviously there's been, Newcastle fans have seen his clips on YouTube and social media and stuff. And, you know, Newcastle have had one of those seasons when they've been disrupted by injury and it's that, why isn't he playing? Why isn't he being brought back? If you go back one game, you saw the previous game as well against Volendam. And I think that was much more of a struggle for him, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. It was a difficult day for Feyenoord in general. Is that Volendam, who are in the relegation zone, this tiny fishing village, and they were really, really scrapping. They sat deep, and that really kind of reduced the opportunities for Mente to get involved in play, because if you have a low block, there's not that space in behind for him to work into. So he didn't get the ball much, and when he did, he was really trying to force stuff to happen. Though he went past his man really well on one occasion, the next 3 or 4 times he basically dribbled it over the byline, and I was actually sat with the in a Feyenoord section where there were sort of a friends and family section. And there was an element of frustration with some of Minter's decision-making. And he came off after 56 minutes.
but you stick with him, and Slot's been really good at trusting him, especially since Africa Cup of Nations, where he's really asserted himself as a starter the whole time. There could have been an argument maybe to not even start him against Ajax. Slot did, and he was repaid with this performance, which is undoubtedly the best of his time in the Netherlands so far.
And Jacob, a quick word on Garang Kuol as well. He didn't feature against Feyenoord. It's the story of his Newcastle career so far, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really sad for him because in many ways it's a parallel of the situation which he underwent at Hearts last season, in that he joined a club which in theory was set up for him to succeed. Volendam at the start of the year played some of the most kids in the entirety of Europe. They have a really they had a really exciting coaching setup. However, there was then this big falling out at board level, which resulted in the entire coaching staff walking, the head coach, the technical director. And they were actually taken over by Xavi Simons' dad, who has played a much more defensive style, a 5-3-2, which is no place for Kuol, and he's basically ended up on the bench, barely playing. It was nice to see him and Minta have a little chat at the end of the game. I understand they were sort of saying to each other, I'll see you in pre-season, which is nice to hear. And it's also interesting with Newcastle going to Australia in the summer, whether Kuol will go with the first team on that trip.
Of course.
Because when there's commercial aims to that tour, you'd imagine that Kuol's presence would be a major boost for that, even if he's not necessarily seen as being ready for the first team yet.
Flashbacks to when I suggested he would be a young player to watch at the last World Cup.
That's right, yeah.
Well, he was, to be fair. I mean, he played really well against, I think, Argentina in, I believe it was the round of 16 game.
Yeah, he did.
Came on and nearly scored. And it's one big target of his to play at the Olympics this summer for Australia. The qualification for that sort of is finalised in the next month or two. So there may be another chance to see him play at a high level in the next few months, maybe before Newcastle have to make their next decision on where he ends up.
Well, thank you, because I was mentioning that as a symbol of my own stupidity, and you've made me feel a lot better about myself, which isn't the way things usually go on this podcast. So thank you, Jacob.
It's a Monday morning. Everyone needs to pick me up.
Yeah,
absolutely. Back to Yakuba Minta, Jacob. He can play, but he can't drive. Another Dutch stereotype incoming.
Yeah, it's really nice for us. So he actually lives really, really close to the Feyenoord Stadium. And if you imagine, there's his house and then there's the stadium, and on the other side is the training ground. And he just simply cycles in every morning.
Lovely.
Which actually, one of the reasons why Newcastle picked Feyenoord was because it was quite similar culturally to Denmark, where he was before. So it wasn't, having just come to Europe from the Gambia only a year before, they kind of quite liked having that cultural continuity. So he cycled over to meet in the morning, and then after the match just walked probably literally 200 or 300 meters back to his apartment through, and this is quite funny, through sort of this street where all the Feyenoord fans meet and mingle after games. So imagine that, you're just having sort of, you're 7 pints deep, you've just beaten your rivals 6-0, and then you just suddenly see your star winger just like strolling back with his kit bag over his shoulder, boot bag in hand.
Love that.
And then, yeah, quiet night in for Jan Cooper, I understand, afterwards. He was absolutely exhausted. And just a word for him as well, he's doing all of this, or this performance was while he was fasting for Ramadan as well.
Right, yeah, of course.
So to be able to do that, really quite remarkable physically as well.
So come on then, I'm going to get you to nail your colours to the mast. This time next year, are we going to be talking about Minta and his promising career as a Newcastle player, coming off the bench maybe, starting for Newcastle in the odd game, or will he be out on loan somewhere else? What do you reckon?
I understand that the decision has not been fully made yet on where he's going to be. I know that Feyenoord want to keep him, and that would not be the worst thing at all for his development, because there still is a lot of work he has to do, especially on the off-ball side. He's hard-working, but positionally, that's got quite a lot of importance, and Eddie Howe has such sort of high demands for his wingers in that sense. But when he was being recruited, they actually compared him favourably to Miguel Almiron. They said, this is how we see you chiming with that system. So maybe, depending on if there's departures in the summer, if Newcastle try and free up PSR space, if he has a good pre-season, that possibility is still there.
It's interesting you mentioned pre-season. I mean, nobody, I don't think, was predicting that Lewis Miley would come through as much as he did. This season, obviously, there's been a lot of injuries to take into account for that, but he had an exceptional pre-season in the United States, and that kind of put him into that position, so you never know what might happen.
There you go. Thank you very much for dropping in, Jacob. Lovely to speak to you, chap.
Pleasure. Thank you for having me.
See you in a bit. Take care.
Bobby said, go. He said, go to Holland. He said, it's a great place to work. He said, I had 2 great years at PSV. And he said, go on your own. He said, you will love it. The people are good. Good people, good coaches, good players.
On the subject of the Netherlands, Chris, here's a quiz question for you. What's the only cheese to be made backwards?
Edam.
Correct.
God, that was...
heavens, George Colgan.
That's terrible podcast content. That would be
shocking. Absolutely shocking.
I was going to ask Jacob that, but then
fair enough. Let's move on very quickly. Huge game against Spurs next weekend, which we'll preview in full on Thursday. We'll talk about that trip to Australia as well. The Premier League overseas charm offensive was in full force this weekend in Nashville, Tennessee as well. Hello to any Pod on the Tyne listeners who made the trek over for that.
Yes, and that was Alan from work was across there, as was Rob Lee, his big mate. So very much Newcastle United connection there. And I think part of the Newcastle United media team might have been out there as well.
Hashtag shit.
Hashtag shit.
That's where he sent
that. Did you
that
see
from.
The video of Alan eating different foods around Kansas? It was great.
Oh, I haven't seen that. I have to see this.
Have you not seen it? It's really good. It's on the Premier League's Instagram feed, and he's just eating a chicken sandwich going, yeah, it's good. It's good, yeah.
Hashtag good.
Shit. Hashtag good. Yeah. Yeah, it's very good. It is excellent. So, as we finish up, one more slightly US-related notice. Congratulations to Newcastle's under-13 boys who won the MENA Cup in Dubai, beating Chicago Fire in the final on penalties. No details on how many of the pens were fully twatted, though, George.
No, probably not very many these days. You know, it's a thing of the past, isn't it? It's like black boots. It's falling out of fashion. 4-4-2's
gone.
You know,
I don't see that anymore.
4-4-2, that's gone. Black boots, twatted penalties, 4-4-2, that's my era.
The nicknames for US teams are quite different to the nicknames that you get, or the sort of second names that you get for UK based teams, isn't it? You wouldn't get many UK based teams where Fire would be the sort of second half of the name. I don't know, where does that
What would Newcastle be? If it can't be the Magpies, what would they be? Newcastle what?
The Newcastle batshit. The Newcastle. crazies, rowdies, crazies, Radgies, the Newcastle Radgies.
There we go.
Who were the rowdies?
Tampa Bay Rowdies. Didn't Peter Beardsley pay for them? I'm sure he did.
Yeah, I think he did. Tampa Bay Rowdies, it's the Newcastle United Radgies.
Sorted.
Perfect.
Right, then that's it. Thank you very much for listening. Get in touch at Pod on the Tyne on Twitter or X. Email us at podonthetyne@theathletic.com. Thank you very much to Jacob for popping in. Thank you for your time, Chris Woff.
You're very welcome, and apologies, Deck, if I did look very surprised when you spoke to me, and hopefully it was you.
There's no way he's made it through this far.
No, he'd have switched off a long time ago.
No way. Absolutely no way.
Thank you for your time, George.
You're so incredibly welcome, Taylor.
As always. Thank you very much for listening. This has been Pod on the Tyne. We shall speak to you on Thursday. Look after yourselves. Have a fabulous week. Take care. Goodbye. Definitely wasn't there. Do you know what would be amazing if it was Ant?
The Athletic.